This is UN in Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Jocelyn Sambira. In this week's program, Rwanda pledges not to close its borders or expel Burundian refugees, and Lesotho's economy is nearing the edge of a fiscal cliff. But first, the death of Boutros Ghali marks the passing of an era, a former UN spokesperson says. The death of the veteran Egyptian diplomat and former UN Secretary General Boutros Ghali marks the passing of an era. That's according to fellow Egyptian Ahmed Fawzi, who served as his deputy spokesperson in the early 1990s and was recruited to the UN by Mr. Boutros Ghali. Mr. Fawzi, who is currently the director of the UN Information Service in Geneva, said that he'd been a formidable leader at a difficult time for the world body. Matthew Wells spoke to Mr. Fawzi and asked him to describe how they first met.
He presided over the UN being involved in the breakdown of the former Yugoslavia, the troubles in Bosnia-Herzegovina, the troubles in Somalia, the awful period of the genocide in Rwanda. But he brought a formidable intellectual power to the UN and was a formidable leader. Very difficult time.
What were his main qualities as Secretary General?
His formidable intellect and his grasp of global affairs. He had not only studied international law and was an international jurist himself, not only had he published over 30 books on international affairs, his doctoral thesis at the University of the Sorbonne in Paris was about international organizations. And so he was extremely well equipped to be the head of the international organization, the United Nations.
What was he proudest of as Secretary General, do you think? You knew him well.
Boutros Ghali was a very proud man. He was proud of being an Egyptian. He was proud of being a Christian Egyptian, of serving his country and the international community when he became Secretary General. And I think his strongest commitment was to work for the independence of his office, the independence of the office of Secretary General of the United Nations, which is no easy feat when you have the member states constantly putting pressure on you and on the organization to do things one way or the other. He stood up for the independence of the office of Secretary General of the United Nations. And that is a tradition that I hope we will see preserved in future mandates.
What was his lasting contribution to the UN, and how do you think history will judge him?
A man of great intellect and a man of great vision. I think his agenda for peace, his agenda for democratization, have also gone down in the annals of the history of the United Nations as seminal documents that have guided us and led us through to our work and the work of other Secretary Generals on the three pillars of the United Nations: peace and security, development and human rights, and how the three are intertwined. He used to always say there can be no peace without development, and there can be no development without peace. There can be no peace and development without human rights. And this has been carried on through Secretary Generals and through the decades since he was Secretary General. His passing is the passing of an era, the end of an era. I must say also that under his patronage, many, many diplomats, formidable diplomats, emerged from the Egyptian Foreign Service. He was Minister of State for Foreign Affairs for about 15 years and has left his mark, indelible mark, on Egyptian foreign policy.
Rwanda has pledged not to close its borders or forcibly repatriate Burundian refugees, according to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR. The agency sought clarification from the government after statements were issued implying the refugees would be relocated to a third country. Over 70,000 refugees from neighboring Burundi are registered with UNHCR. Martina Pomeroy, an external relations officer with the agency, spoke to Priscilla Lecomte about their initial concerns.
We found out on Friday that it was the Minister of Foreign Affairs who issued this statement that they're intending to relocate Burundian refugees outside the country. And this was concerning for us because UNHCR is one of the government's key partners as far as refugees go, and we had not been consulted on this. So we immediately met with our counterpart ministry, which is the Ministry for Disaster Management and Refugee Affairs, to try to have some clarification on this. So we got some reassurances in that meeting that we're not going to see refugees being expelled, we're not going to have the borders closed. But we really urge the government to make these clarifications public, you know, to prevent panic in the refugee camps.
Do you know what are the reasons for this decision?
The statement referred to kind of, you know, pressure and the burden of having refugees in the country. You know, we understand very well that it is a very significant burden, particularly when there's already 75,000 Congolese refugees living here. At the same time, international partners really did step up last year in supporting Rwanda. Donors contributed over $35 million for the refugee response here just for the Burundi refugees. So Rwanda got a lot of support from the international community, and I think that has to be taken into account.
What is the situation of the Burundian refugees in the country now?
So we have just over 70,000 refugees who are actively registered with UNHCR right now from Burundi. And of those, about 45,000 live in Mahama camp, which is a large camp that's kind of divided into two halves. So refugees receive the basic assistance in terms of shelter and access to water and so on. But we're trying to now transition from the emergency phase, get people out of the tents into more durable structures. So we just recently launched our funding appeal to donors. So this timing of the statement was not really helpful for us because we're on the one hand asking donors to help support refugees here, and then suddenly being, you know, hearing that refugees might be outside the country.
What's your advice to the Rwandese government now?
Well, we hope that they will clarify what exactly is meant by this statement, because there's no explanation of any kind of timeline for this plan, who these international partners are that they are referring to, which third countries these refugees would go to. So we're already hearing that this is having major impact in the refugee camps, as people are wondering, you know, where are we supposed to go, by when? You know, it's causing a lot of uncertainty. And we're waiting to hear if this is also potentially having ramifications on people who want to leave Burundi but maybe feel now that they're unwelcome here.
Lesotho's economy is slowing down, which could indicate significant fiscal problems to come. That's according to the International Monetary Fund's mission chief to the Southern African country. Like many in sub-Saharan Africa, Lesotho achieved strong economic growth between 2010 and 2014, averaging 4.6%, but that's since dropped to 2.6%. Fiscal problems in South Africa make Lesotho particularly vulnerable to drops in revenue that could persist over time. David Dunn, IMF mission chief for Lesotho, explains the impact of such close ties between these two economies.
Lesotho is part of the RAND common monetary area. So the luti has a one-for-one parity with the RAND. Much of Lesotho's imports, and in fact most of its consumption goods, do come from South Africa. So when you do have inflation or exchange rate movements in South Africa, of course, that directly impacts Lesotho. But the area where Lesotho is most impacted by South Africa is on the government revenue side. Lesotho receives a large amount of its revenues, about half of its total revenues, from the Southern African Customs Union. In recent years, it's been about 30% of GDP. Now, when South Africa's economy begins to slow down and imports taper off, import duty collections taper off, then that can have a very strong effect on Lesotho's government revenues, which is the situation we're currently in.
Right. So, I mean, there are some that say that South Africa is actually on the brink of a recession. So just how vulnerable is Lesotho?
Well, that's a very good point, because not only have the SACU revenues tumbled just a couple years ago in the fiscal year 2014-15, Lesotho's revenues from SACU were 7 billion rand. Last year, they dipped to 6.6 billion rand. And in the year ahead, they're going to drop to 4.5 billion rand. So in the 2016-17 fiscal year, which begins this April, the government is already facing a very difficult fiscal situation. And with the slow growth, perhaps even recession in South Africa, this drop in revenues is going to persist for quite some time. So it's going to create some serious fiscal issues for Lesotho.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of UN in Africa. You can follow more of our programs at radio.un.org. We're also on Facebook and on Twitter. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Jocelyn Sambira.